listening to the CWR Talk Network, America's voice for causes, issues, and life empowerment. This is the CWR Talk Network, hashtag 1 million strong.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Be the Change You Want to See. I'm your host, Norvell Dorson. I'm super excited for the program tonight. We got an action-packed show. We are going to be covering the first part of a four-part series entitled Pillars of the Community. So if you didn't get a chance to listen to our first kickoff episode, those four pillars are the spiritual pillar, the political pillar, the economic pillar, and also the physical pillar. So we're going to be covering the spiritual pillar tonight. And this is a very important one to me because I myself am a Christian. And I also have two very special guests with me tonight, two of my friends, two gentlemen that I respect in more ways than one. I have Chioke Bracey, the senior pastor at Shiloh Deliverance Church International in Detroit, Michigan, and Bill Colmy, pastor of Journey Church in Livonia. So we are going to be having a very real conversation tonight. I'm going to be having a good conversation with my friends, but not just with my friends. I want this to be a conversation with community. So we're going to be inviting callers to call in. So on the back half of the show, we're going to be giving out that call-in number. We want you guys to call in. We want your questions. We want your comments. We want you to chime in because we're going to be talking about the church and the church's involvement in the community. I want this show to be educational. I want this to be a very thought-provoking conversation. So without further ado, I'm just going to jump right into things. So, Chioke, Bill, how you guys doing tonight?
I'm doing good, brother. Doing good. Glad to be here.
Yeah, doing good, man, Norvell. Thank you so much. Looking forward to tonight.
Cool. So glad to have you guys. Very blessed for both of you guys to be able to join me tonight. As both of you know, as I know, there's a lot of misconceptions around the church, man. Growing up in Detroit, there's probably a church on every other corner, man. Church then liquor store, church then liquor store. So there's a lot of different, you know, opinions about the church and their involvement in the community. I've had different conversations with people that I've crossed paths with. And a lot of people just really think that, you know, the church is either robbing its congregation or not really doing much for the community. You know, we have these mega churches that are, you know, multi-million dollar buildings, and they're in impoverished communities, you know, abandoned houses surrounding them, that type of thing. A lot of people think that the church is content, you know, with a lot of the things that are going on in America today. With the racism, the bigotry, you know, just the clear social injustices that are taking place in our country. I think that the church is, you know, silent or kind of like sleeping, you know, kind of off in the distance, not really paying attention. So a lot of people got sore feelings about that. And then people think that the church is segregated in itself, man. And, you know, I would have to agree with that in some ways. You got a black church, you got a white church, you got, you know, Latino churches, you got Asian churches, you know, and the minority is a diverse church, you know. You see more segregated churches, or you see more churches that are one way than the other than you see a diverse congregation. So a lot of people have sore feelings about that, so. I want to get some questions going. I want to talk to you guys. I want to get your take on it, and what the church does for the community so that we can kind of set the record straight and I really start to change that narrative. So it doesn't matter who answers first, but I definitely want to hear from both of you guys. My first question is, you know, as a church leader, you know, how do you feel a church should serve their community? You know, what does that look like? And I want to put an emphasis on, you know, the churches or the communities that really need help, you know, the impoverished communities, the communities that are really in need. So what does that service look like for you guys?
Chioke, go ahead.
Well, oh, sure. Well, for me, I believe that just like with anything, and this is kind of my disclaimer, There are levels to everything. And I believe that there is no, I believe that the one common thing amongst all churches, or that should be common amongst all churches, is that they do serve the communities that they are in. Our motto at Shiloh has really been to serve the members of our church community first, and then reach out from there to the surrounding community, the neighborhoods that we're around, and then stretch out to the city and the surrounding areas. And I think it should look like biblical church lived. When a church was first founded, it was founded on family. You know, it was groups of families, and it was, you know, the Bible, just as much as it talks about spiritual gifts and all of those things, it also talks about how the church should take care of the widows and the impoverished and all of those things. So I think that the basis of it should be that the church should be able to assess the needs of the people that they have who are a part of the congregation and that are a part of the community, and then whatever that need is at that time, address it and do the best you can to fulfill those needs. So, for example, at Shiloh, we have a large population of elders. So one of the things that we did is when the pandemic first started, we got boxes together of toiletries and sanitizer and alcohol, whatever we can get our hands on, and got them to our elders because we knew that they would not be able to get out and stand in those lines and you know, all of that stuff. Some of them couldn't drive. So that was the first thing that we did, was kind of get that together and do that. We know that people in our community need food and clothing. So we've done a drive in Norvale. You've actually been a great help with that, especially during this time. But, you know, just getting people the food and the clothing that they need. I believe that the church should be a full service station. And I think we have problems when we don't have balance. So, yes, the church is a place to get spiritual knowledge, spiritual healing, spiritual upliftment. But at the same time, we need to be uplifting people emotionally. We need to be uplifting people mentally. We need to be empowering them physically and financially and economically and all of those things. So I believe that the church needs to first service those, kind of like you have set up the pillars. We need to service people in those areas, because I can teach you about tithing and giving offerings and how God will bless you. And I truly believe that God will bless people who give offerings and pay tithes. However, if I don't give you common knowledge on how to manage the other 90% after you give your tithes, then it's possible that you can always be broke or living paycheck to paycheck because you're not managing the 90 correctly. So the balance of, yes, we need to honor God by paying our tithes and giving our offerings. The flip side, let me give you some financial awareness seminars. Let me teach you how to get a mortgage and not get, you know, messed over on the interest rate. So let me teach you how to raise your credit score. Let me teach you how to balance a checkbook. So I think serving the community, we can feed people as much as we want, but if we don't teach them how to do things on their own, then we will always be in a situation where we are battling poverty and lack and those things if we're not giving them practical application to go along with the spiritual knowledge that we're giving them.
Very nice. Very nice.
Yeah, that's so good, Jokey. I mean, I agree so much, man. I think that that you and I agree on a ton with that. Norvell, to answer the question that you asked, you know, with what does it look like for the church to serve the community? I think that, you know, one of the things that that the church always has to keep out in the forefront is, you know, and I think it's a double-edged sword, man, because I think it gets really complicated when I think people will kind of turn up their nose at a certain point when the church says, you know, like, our primary responsibility is to spread the gospel. Well, you know, you can't turn your nose up at that because it's true. But when you consider the fact that the church is the only entity on the face of the planet that stewards the good news of the gospel, I'd say the first way that the church serves a community is by doing that, right? Like, we've got to stay true to that. Now, I don't mean that to say that's the only thing the church does or should do, but I think that we can have mission drift when we forget that primarily, though. That's the primary call of the church, because if the church doesn't do that, nobody else on the face of planet Earth does that. And where I agree so much with what Chiyoki said. I think that when we are faithful to that as the church, like when we are faithful to planting the seed of the gospel in a community, what grows up around that is biblical community. What grows up around that is the body of Christ. It's the church. Like that's, you know, as a church planter, that's one of the amazing things that, you know, that you get to kind of experience and see is God doing something out of nothing in a community. So there one day there is no kind of form or shape of this expression of the local church. And then the next day there is, you know, and that comes from planting the seed of the gospel in a community. Well, what grows out of that is biblical community. It's the church. And so where that is being faithfully stewarded, then what we see from that is we see sort of all those other things kind of emerge from that, because where we follow that, you know, that to its full end or to, you know, as it progresses, that being planting the seed of the gospel and seeing community grow out of that, and where we continue to be faithful in stewarding that and shepherding that and pastoring that, what happens is you develop this community of believers. Like, you know, I mean, one of the hallmarks Paul is going to say in his letters in the Bible, he's going to say, you know, like we should be spurring one another on to love and good deeds. Well, if we are faithful to that and we're true to that, then all these other services to the community are birthed out of that. But the one thing that the church can't give up ground on and recognize is that the uniqueness of the church and how we serve the community is that we've got to keep the gospel out front. Where we are faithful to that, man, God will grow. He will grow, you know, different outreaches out of that. He will grow different ways of serving the community and feeding the community and, you know, providing educational opportunities to the community, stuff like that, out of that. But that is, and I don't think you asked it this way, but it's the way I would answer it is, you know, just like, I mean, what is the best way the church can serve the community? I think that remembering the uniqueness in how we serve the community is top of the order, at least in my mind. And then what is birthed out of that is all these other ways that we can meet the needs of the community. Because of people that have been redeemed, of people that have been saved, of people that understand the grace of God and the, you know, in the ways that he has done a work in our life, like the natural result of that is service to the community. And so I would say gospel first, and then from that, man, just watch as those gifts and abilities inside of people are activated, the ways that, you know, God has wired them and gifted them to service the community, man, if we will be faithful to that, we will see the church begin to serve the community in ways that go far beyond that. The linchpin is the gospel, though, I think.
Yeah, no, that's good, man. I agree with you guys so much. And Bill, you kind of hit the nail on the head there with the gospel being the priority. I think we serve the communities first by, you know, just like you said, spreading the gospel. But, you know, I look at it as, you know, Jesus said that we fulfill the entire law, you know, with the two great commandments, love your God, love your neighbor. So, you know, I'm fulfilling the law by, you know, loving my community and spreading the gospel. And what I've learned in my experience is, you know, by helping people, you know, giving people a helping hand. And, you know, just really exhibiting those Christian principles, it softens hearts, man, to accept the gospel. And I don't feel that just because somebody isn't there yet from a belief standpoint, or they're, you know, they haven't had that, you know, one-on-one experience with God, that they're, you know, exempt from getting help. So I'm always working at those things from a parallel standpoint, like, hey, I'm going to share the gospel, but that doesn't keep me from helping you, you know, if you need somewhere to stay, if you need something to eat, you know, all those types of things. So really, really respect you guys' perspectives. And I think that's super, super, super deep. Yeah, I got another question for you guys.
Go ahead,
Chiyoki. Go ahead.
And I was going to say, and I really think that those two things go hand in hand. Because when you look at Christ's ministry, he met needs everywhere that he went, you know, he in both the spiritual and the natural needs. So, you know, we have situations where they need to pay taxes, which is a very natural thing, and Jesus handles it. Go get the fish and take the coin out of his mouth, or He feeds the 5,000 plus people. And I think as the body of Christ, that is something that we really need to kind of press home, that those two things really, really go hand in hand. And like Pastor Bill was saying, like they grow out of each other. You know what I'm saying? So if I'm really proclaiming the gospel of Christ and I'm really saying that I'm a Christian, then I have to do what Christ did in his ministry. And, you know, I think those things go hand in hand. And unfortunately, sometimes what happens and what can be a sore point for people, kind of how you mentioned earlier, even though I have my kind of view on that. But I will agree that sometimes there are some places and that are more concerned with membership or, you know, looking to part or, you know, where like serving people kind of gets on the back burner. So for those places, I would encourage you to just remember, you know, if we are really about doing what Christ did in the earth, then yes, we are here to tell people about the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ and how he is able to save their souls and all of those good things, and also how he is and has been throughout the Bible and throughout history and throughout my personal life, a provider. And so when we are able to step in and do those things, then that's when we really live that life, and that's what helps to draw people.
Yeah, no, it's definitely real, man. I mean, you said it there. They work hand in hand, and that's basically what I was trying to put across, man. We need to be working on both of those things at the same time. I think that's really going to build up the body of Christ for sure. That's actually a great segue, man. It's troubling how people think that, you know, the church is kind of off into the distance, you know, in terms of recent events around social injustice, you know, racism, you know, unarmed black people being shot dead in the street, all those things. How does the church stand? And what's your stance as a church leader on kind of these recurring events of injustice in our country? And, you know, what is your congregation doing to kind of take action and take a stance against these wrongdoings, man, that's taking place in our country right now?
Yeah, man. I mean, I think that, and this is Bill, you know, I think that it's a tragedy. I think that what we're seeing unfold, I think in so many ways, Norvell, it's so revealing, which in a sense, you know, you've got to celebrate the revealing in that it's better to know where you stand than where you don't, you know, or have some kind of an illusion about where you stand. So I think that there's a grace in that, that it's been very revealing, especially within the context of the local church. Now I will say that what it's revealed, I don't think is great, man. I think it's kind of disappointing in some ways. You know, I mean, my stance on it in Norvell, you know, you and I are friends. I mean, we've talked about this stuff before, man. Like my stance on it is, I mean, it's an absolute tragedy. I think that where I speak to it from a church leader is in recognizing, you know, in how our congregation is responding, man. I'd love to talk to that for a minute, because I think that there's probably a lot of congregations that are in a similar context to ours that are probably experiencing the same thing. You know, for me as a church leader, what I see is I see division. I see divided perspectives. I see divided kind of points of view, which, you know, honestly, man, to me as a pastor is, at first it's a little shocking. And then you realize, well, you know, we're dealing with humanity, so it shouldn't be shocking. But then at the same time, it's very revealing. And, you know, the way that we're responding to that is, and I think that, first of all, I would preface it by saying, I think you have to respond contextually. So I think that where you're at as a leader or as a church, you know, in the cultural context, I think sort of determines what response looks like. And so I can't speak for every church in every setting. I can only speak for our church in our setting to say that how we're responding is recognizing that man, through all of the last couple of months, and I know it goes well beyond that, but like right now, as we sort of chronologically hold this up against our lives, in the last couple of months, things have become even more visible, even more visual, even more the forefront of conversation. And there's a lot more people engaged in conversations about this than there were, you know, at the end of 2019, right? And so in that, what I recognized, and you know, it just is what it is. And you know, I mean, what I recognize though is that, like in our context, man, we're in, you know, kind of a middle class, predominantly white, you know, suburban kind of context. Okay. Well, what I recognize is that most of the people that call our church home, not all, but most of the people in our community, they have, you know, that are believers. Cause I can't speak to every other part of society, but as a church leader, they, you know, most, the way I would say it is most white Christians don't have a theology for injustice. And I think that's a shame, but I think it's a real problem. And I don't, you know, that they have no theology for injustice. They have no theology for racism. They have no theology for this stuff. And so what I found, Norvell, is I found that a lot of people were being, you know, whether or not the church speaks into things, people are going to be shepherded through conversations. And so the majority of the shepherding was happening through different news outlets and different political points of view and things like that. So I realized that if the church is going to shepherd people through what are some of the most important conversations in our lifetime, we can't just sit back and kind of, you know, throw out a sermon or a tweet every once in a while. Like, we've got to teach to this because the news outlets are teaching to this, or at least they're teaching something, right? And so what I started to recognize is that for our church, for our congregation, most of the people in our congregation lack a theology for injustice, and they lack a theology for racism. And so for me as a church leader and how we're responding, it means teaching directly to that, man. We've got to provide some kind of a biblical framework for people to navigate this as an issue of faith, not as an issue of politics, right? As an issue of faith, not as an issue of just social dynamics. And I think that that's lacking for so many, man. And so, you know, while I know that that's not the response for everybody everywhere, I think that, you know, contextually for us, that is the primary thing that we realized was, man, we just have a lot of people in our church and in our community. They don't have a theology. They don't have a theological framework for this. And, you know, we take some of the responsibility for that and recognizing, well, we haven't equipped people for this. Like, we haven't talked about it. And, you know, and man, I, you know, I'm sorry for that. I've repented of that. I've tried to, in my own self, kind of navigate that. But I also don't want to live there because grace is for change. So I understand that while I feel bad about that, there's a grace of God in that, and the grace is for change. So we're going to change that. And we have started to teach to that. We have started to have conversations about that. Does that mean every sermon every weekend becomes about racism? No, but it means that needs to become part of our regular conversation where we're addressing these things and where we're teaching to it specifically. You know, man, I'll be honest with you, that's been met with kind of a mixed bag of response, to tell you the truth.
I think this is T.O. Kentucky. I think that is very important, Bill, what you were saying, because for me, what it does, it shows that there is something systematic that is happening there. You know, there is, like you said, it's not a one-off tweet or a one-off sermon. Like, there is something that you guys are doing, especially in the context of your particular church and your particular congregation. Because a lot of times what I think people on the outside do is that they try to take the church and throw a uniform blanket over the entire body of Christ, knowing that we are all diverse and we are all different. I mean, and diversity in more than just a racial context, because I've been blessed to travel. So I've been to all black churches that are in Canada that are way different from all black churches that are in Detroit. So, the key that I think that you pulled out is that it looks different for every church. And I think what happens in these times is that people want everybody to respond the exact same way to every situation. So Pastor Bill is at his church and he's teaching biblically
on what a Christian's viewpoint should be or what God's viewpoint is on racism and oppression and all of those things. But since they're not out marching with signs, people saying they ain't really doing nothing. And I think that's what we have to get away from, is expecting everybody to do the same thing or be unified in their approach to a problem. There are more than one way to solve any type of problem. So I think that's very commendable of you to actually to point out, take your congregation through the theology of it. Because here's the thing, no matter what your political alignment is, no matter what your cultural alignment is, at the very common denominator for Christians should be Christ. So what Christ says or what the Bible says should, if there's a conflict between my political alignment and my alignment with Christ, and my alignment with Christ should always win. My alignment with Christ should top anything. So I am definitely an African-American male, no doubt about it. I know my culture. I know my history. But my blackness will never override my Christianity. So I think that's something that we have to recognize. And then I think, like I said, that systematic education, because we are dealing with some systemic things that have been in place, and the only way to really combat that is through another system. You have to move another system in place. So what we've been doing at Shiloh is I've been talking to my young men, you know, and I have not necessarily preached a message about it or a sermon about it, but I have taken time over the pulpit to tell my young men, you know, remind them that they are valued and that their life does matter because Christ took the time out to breathe into them and bring them to the earth with purpose. So their life does matter. And we've had discussions. And of course, on our end, it's kind of from the African-American perspective of, you know, things that just are common. Like if you get pulled over, what to do and what not to do. What are your rights? Those type of things. And then another thing that we have done and that I've told my congregation to do is to make sure, the Bible says, acknowledge him in all your ways and he will direct your path. So when things like this happen, it is very traumatic for me as a black man to be exposed to videos and footage of black men being shot over and over and over and over and over again. It's on the news. It's on social media. So that's traumatic for me because I recognize that that could quite possibly be me one day. And so with that being traumatic for me, trauma brings up a lot of different emotions. So you have people that are wondering, should I protest or should I go out and do this? Should I loot? Should I do all of these things? And what I told my congregation is, of course, the things that you know would go directly against God's will, don't do those. But if you're trying to figure out whether you should write a letter to a senator or protest, acknowledge God. Say, God, listen, I'm struggling with this right now. I have so many feelings. I have so many ideas. And I want to do something because I know this isn't right. But, God, I want you to lead me in the direction that would get me the best results. So, God, if you tell me to write a letter to my senator or if you tell me to call my local state representative or whoever, God, that's what I will do. God, if you tell me to go out and protest, then, God, that's what I will do. But sometimes I believe what happens is we allow our emotions to overrun our better judgment as far as seeking God first, and then we react off impulse, we react off emotion, and then we miss God. So that's the main thing that I have been telling my congregation is, look, whatever you are thinking about doing, I need you to seek God first. And then from there, build. And that's when I prayed about it, and I said, God, well, what do you want us to do as a congregation, or what do you want me to do as a leader? And that's what he told me. He said, listen, I want you to tell them to seek me first because everybody's response is going to be different. And so that's what we did along with, you know, just having open and honest conversations about it. And what I would love to see is for different congregations to come together and have discussions about it and just to be able to toss ideas and see those things. So for a church that's in an urban setting like my church to come together with Pastor Bill's church and just have those conversations because, like you said earlier, Norvell, Sundays can be kind of segregated,
And I don't think it's always intentional, because just as people of comfort and people of culture, we have certain things that we prefer. So certain types of music or certain types of delivery when someone is speaking, like, you go where you feel comfortable. So sometimes those things can cross racial lines, but just because of geography and the way that some things are, we sometimes go to churches, they're considered, I'm using my air quotes, y'all can't see it, a black church or a white church or a Protestant or a Baptist or whatever it is. So I think once we handle things in-house, like Pastor Bill was talking about, then we can come together and have those productive discussions together to see what we can do on a more unified or global front. But you have to handle the need that's in your house first.
No, I think that's a great point both of you guys are making. I think that the common theme that I'm hearing here is that Christ is the priority in all of this. And after that, I like how, you know, there was a lot of conversation around how each congregation is different and how we're going to tackle this problem, because we all have acknowledged that there's a problem here. But what does that problem solving look like for my congregation? Like Bill says, you know, hey, creating a theology or teaching on this subject is going to help my congregation. Or for you, Chioki, you know, talking to the young men in your congregation, it's going to help drive change. I think that looks different. Just like there's diversity in the body of Christ, man, we all have a job to do. I think we need to first, like you guys said, you know, let's get in prayer. You know, let's consult God. Let's consult the Most High and say, hey, you know, where do I fit in this? You know, and what can I do to drive change? And I think what comes after that is action. You know, faith without works is dead. We all know that. So what does that action look like? Mm-hmm. Because for me, I'm a big problem solver, you know. Just like you guys gave your examples, that's problem solving, you know. And I think of it as, hey, how am I going to help solve this problem? So for me, it looks like, hey, there's a issue of systematic racism. So I'm going to educate my people, and then we're going to go out and we're going to go get with the legislatures and we're going to change this law. Or we're going to rally together and we're going to elect a new, you know, DA for the city who's, you know, throwing all of these young black men in jail disproportionately. You know, we're going to actually drive change that way. So I think the common theme is that we all just need to really consult with God, you know, and keep the gospel and Christ a priority. Let's take a step back and then problem solve in our sphere of influence. What does that look like for me and the people that I'm impacting? So. No, that's great. That's great, guys, for sure. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to take a very, very quick break, guys. Super deep conversation. We still got some more questions, but I want to open up the floor for our guests to call in, our listeners to call in, and hit us with some questions, hit us with some comments. That call-in number is 563-999-3660. Again, that number is 563-999-3660. We'll be back in a quick second.
You're listening to the CWR Talk Network, America's voice for causes, issues, and life empowerment. This is the CWR Talk Network, hashtag 1 million strong. The CWR Talk Network is not just another talk radio network. We are the champion for important causes and issues like financial literacy. That is why so many people listen to the Lionel Shipman Shape Your Finances show. Lionel is a seasoned veteran in the finance industry, but more importantly, Lionel cares about people. He shares his vast knowledge of the finance world in a personal way that goes beyond dollars and cents, with advice that makes sense. So let Lionel help you get your finances in order or avoid costly errors in judgment that may be devastating to you and your family. Listen to the Lionel Shipman Check Your Finances show every Tuesday exclusively on the CWR Talk Network at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Central. listening to the CWR Talk Network, America's voice for causes, issues, and life empowerment. This is the CWR Talk Network, hashtag 1 million strong.
All right, welcome back, everyone, and be the change you want to see. I got my friends here, Chioke Bracey and Bill Colmeyer. We're talking about the church and the community. Very, very good conversation, and we're just going to pick up where we left off. So, Bill, you are a church planner, man. We met a little bit over a year ago. I'm a Detroit native. You're a Michigan native. I know you were working at a church in Florida before planning a church up here. I just wanted to talk a little bit more about your church planning experience and kind of break down those misconceptions that, you know, church planning is another form of gentrification, and kind of what your core values are, what your mission is, you know, as a church planner, and kind of what the purpose of that is in coming into an area like the greater Metro Detroit area.
Yeah, man. Wow. I mean, such a great question. You know, I think that church planting is, you know, is one of the most amazing ways to watch God move. You know, I think that there's some confusion out there that exists. And you know, for anybody listening who's not familiar with the term church planting, you know, it means starting new churches and kind of plant the idea of a seed, you know, planting the seed of something and watching it grow. So that's what a church plant is. It's starting new churches. And I think, Norvell, I think coming, you know, where we're at in the era of multi, you know, multi-site church, I think some people are confused about what church planting can mean. You know, there's a lot of churches in a lot of areas that have more than one location, not saying that that's a bad thing. But that's, you know, that's an element of reproducing, which is okay. And that's a really good thing sometimes, but it's not the same as church planting. So, you know, where you're starting something brand new from scratch, there is, you know, a community in which that particular expression of the local church did not exist, and then it does. That's what church planting is. And, you know, I think that while I can't speak to the whole church planting sphere, you know, the entirety of it that goes on in terms of, like, you know, it just kind of being an element of regentrification, stuff like that, I do think there's an element of that, man. I do think that there is an element within church planting where, you know, planting in, like, you know, in city settings can be hip, it can be cool, you know. And I think that while the heart behind it can be good, I think sometimes it can be a little misconstrued or misdirected, primarily because I think one of the huge elements with church planting is talking about, you know, about, like, there almost needs to be a certain sort of indigenous feel to starting a new church. And when I say indigenous, I mean, like, whatever culture you're in, it has to, you know, it has to make sense that you as a leader understand how to operate, you know, within that cultural context. And so I think sometimes we can get out of whack, man. I speak from personal experience, you know, in that I've made, you know, missteps in my church planting time for sure. But I do want to talk about the kind of the core value thing, because I think that that's such a good question. And I want to answer it from two different perspectives, because I think when I think of core values, you know, for a church plant or for church planting in general, I think that there's two sides to that question. One is just organizationally, you know, core values are sort of an organizational language. So, you know, most businesses, most companies, they have core values. The way that I teach it to our leaders is, you know, to kind of help them understand, like, what certain words mean. We lump that in there with things like mission and vision, you know, kind of the idea that vision is what you see. Mission is what we do. Core values are who you are while you do what you do. Like, these are the things that we have said are important. This is who we want to be while we pursue the mission that we have, you know, as the local church. And so, so I think there's an organizational aspect of that when it comes to church planting, that that most church plants have core values established regardless of whatever context you find yourself in. I think that organizationally, what that means is it means that you have to be able to assimilate those core values to your cultural context. So, for example, for us, with the church that I lead and serve at the Journey Church, you know, our core values are unity, creativity, stewardship, and excellence. So the question becomes, you know, now those values exist regardless of what cultural context we're in. So the question then becomes, how do we adapt those core values to whatever community we find ourselves in? You know, what does it look like to have unity be at the forefront of our service to the community? What does it look like for creativity to be at the forefront of how we serve the community? What does it look like for, you know, excellence? Excellence not being perfection, excellence being doing the best you can with what you have. What does that look like in the way that we serve our community and execute the mission that Jesus has given us? You know, what does it look like for stewardship, right? The good management, essentially, of the resources, all the resources that God places in your hands. So that is certainly money, but it's also more than that. It's facilities, it's opportunity, it's people, it's, you know, stewardship of everything that God places in your hands. So I think that there's a really interesting side to that question from a church planting perspective. That is, you know, as a church planter, you are probably going to have core values that you decide on, maybe even before you know the cultural or community context you're going to be in, because those core values sort of flow out of who you are. Then the question becomes, how do you assimilate those, or how do those become manifest in the community that you're serving in or planting in? But the other side of it, though, you know, to that, that's an organizational answer. I think from an individualistic answer, there is an element of recognizing that while it may not specifically fall in the category of core values, man, church planting is one of those things that can be so amazing. And it can also be just kind of a dumpster fire if it's not handled or managed correctly. You know, I think that one of the best things I've ever heard somebody say is, because church planting is kind of a popular thing in certain circles right now, which is not a bad thing. You know, the more people hearing the gospel, obviously the better. New churches, statistically speaking, are one of the most effective ways to reach, you know, people who do not currently know Jesus. And so I think church planting is really important. However, that being said, I think that when it is done from the wrong place or from the wrong posture, it can yield much different results. You know, you can start a church without the favor of God on it, without the hand of God on it. That sounds crazy. It may sound weird, but you can. I mean, you get the right team, you get the right charismatic leader in place, you get the right kind of language, and you know, you get the right elements in place, you can start something that looks like a church that is not actually having any spiritual impact on the community that it's in, and it can be started for the wrong reasons. However, when that is done properly, man, it's such an amazing thing. And I think that one of the key questions that needs to be there, sort of in essence a core value of church planting, right, rather than just the organization of the church that you're planting, a core value of church planting needs to be understanding the community that you are going to be planting in. What are the needs of the community? What are the, you know, what are the strengths and the weaknesses of that community? What is the cultural makeup of that community? What does that look like? You know, what, because, and it goes back to this, I would simplify it by saying this, Norvell. I think that, you know, the essence of the church in a community is that we steward the good news of the gospel, right? So asking that question, what is good news to this community that we're going to be in? And the only way that you can actually answer that is to understand the community that you're going to be in. What is good news to the people in this community? Because if you are proclaiming the good news of the gospel, but it doesn't sound like good news to the people that you're talking to, then you're missing some element of the kind of the missional factor that's there. And so I would look at that question of core values from two different ways. One being organizationally, one being as church planters, some of the core values that we need to have in place. One of them has to be for sure understanding the community that you're in. You know, church planting is not a franchise thing. You know, I think that sometimes it gets misunderstood. It's like opening up a new McDonald's. Like, you know, the equation just works, and so wherever you put it, wherever you open it up, you produce the same. You know, you got the same menu, you got the same price points, you got the same everything, and it just works. Well, church planting is not franchising. It's not just, you know, it's not just doing the same thing over and over again, regardless of the community that it's in. When it's done authentically and genuinely and from a place of love and genuine care and a desire to see the kingdom of God advance and the gospel reach people's hearts and see people saved, it's not just a franchise thing. It's got to be approached from the perspective of understanding the people that you're trying to love, man. And so I don't know if that's what you're after, but when I hear core values, my brain goes in two different directions. It goes organizational and it goes individual.
Nah, man, you pretty much stole the words out of my mouth when you touched on church planting not being franchisement, you know, or franchising. We're not just duplicating or replicating another church in a different area. You know, we're really serving the needs of the community that we're planting in. And I think that's the importance of it. And I don't think if you don't have that down packed, then that might make or break you for sure. If you plant a church, you know, in the heart of Detroit, and, you know, you don't really understand how to serve that particular community, or none of your congregation understands Detroit or are Detroiters, I think that's like a make or break point as well. So, no, I think you hit the nail on the head there, man. Chioki,
yeah,
I'm going to leave you out, man.
I got
another question for you, dude. So, I got a question for you, Chioki.
Yes, sir.
Fellow Detroiter.
Yes, sir.
Mega churches, man. I want to know your stance on mega churches and, you know, how they have either supported their communities or failed their communities, and just Detroit churches in general. We get a lot of the feedback that, hey, you know, pastors are kind of fleecing their flock, man. They're lining their pockets, driving around in Bentleys and Maseratis, and the congregation is impoverished. I think there was an incident a few years back, a couple years ago. There's an organization called New Era Detroit that kind of stormed a church here in the city, saying that the pastor was, like, you know, taking thousands of dollars from his congregation, and, you know, people in the community are starving, man. And this particular pastor, like, drives like a Bentley, you know, he's wealthy. You know, and I just wanted to get your take on that, man, and how the church is serving in Detroit specifically.
Well, for me, let me be completely honest, because that's just the type of person that I am. It sounds a little aggressive. It's because I grew up as a pastor's kid. So my father started our church when I was 10 years old. And at the same time, I want to have balance, because I believe that there are two sides to every situation. But one of the things that I want to say, I have no issue with mega churches if they are serving their congregation both spiritually and meeting whatever needs they can meet naturally. I have no issues with mega churches. I know a lot of people have issues with mega churches. And I think one of the things is that people really have to search, understand, and know for themselves, because a lot of criticism that comes from the outside, from people who have not been in or near that church. So I know that there are plenty of mega churches in the area of Detroit who are, you know, preaching the word of God, instructing their members, doing things to make their members' lives better, doing college nights and FAFSA nights and feeding the homeless and all of those type of things. And on the property of their mega churches, they have housing for their elderly members. They have daycares for the children. They have all of these things, but you'll get somebody who drives by the church and will never go in and just say, oh, they're using all that money for this, this, and this, but they have no real knowledge of where the money is going, coming from. The same thing with the pastors. Sometimes we don't know how this pastor is driving the Bentley. When I was growing up, people would say that my father, like, we had the things that we had because my father had a church. And we were living in Oak Park. Like, Oak Park is not the pinnacle of wealth in the Tri-City area. You know what I'm saying? But people are like, oh, well, y'all get your daddy got that car because he got the church. My daddy is driving an Intrepid. Like, it's a Dodge Intrepid. What are you saying? But at the same, on the flip side, we won't. They don't take the same stance with drug dealers who are driving Bentleys while they serving people who are impoverished and ruining their lives. You see what I'm saying? So I want people, number one, to have the same energy. I want you to have that same energy across the board. Number two, I just think that balance needs to be had. Like, we really have to have balance, and that if there are a lot of people that are going to mega churches or churches, period, I believe that the church should be fulfilling the role and the mission that Christ gave the church when when it was created. And so as long as the church is doing that, then I have no issue. I believe that the way that God set up, and it's amazing because the way that God set up the system of worship is that when you worship, you get something out of it. So when the children of Israel brought sacrifices to the tabernacle, there were certain sacrifices that they offered that they were able to take some of the meat from the burnt sacrifice that they offered. And so God set up worship where we can get something out of it. And that something looks different. So sometimes I go in God's presence and I worship him. And the benefit that I get is simply being in his presence. Sometimes the benefit is that I get healed. Sometimes the benefit is that he turns situations around, or he gives me miracles, or he blesses me with finances, or he restores me. So all of those things are different in that return. But I believe if the church gets to the point where we are only trying to take, then that's when I have an issue. So if the church is serving the community and doing everything that they need to do, I have no problem, you know, with mega churches. But I believe the larger issue is that a lot of people have a lot of things to say, but their opinions are not founded on any facts. They're uneducated. And I think that's the danger, because it's very easy for people. We are in a society right now where people will basically go with whatever's out there. So I can put a photo of Harriet Tubman up and put a random quote under there and put hyphen Harriet Tubman, and people will repost it as if Harriet Tubman said it and treat it as if Harriet Tubman said it. Harriet Tubman never said that. And so what you have is somebody has art or somebody's upset about something, and so they say, oh, the pastor taking all the money. And then you have a bunch of people saying the pastor take all the money. Like the new era Detroit situation, I'm not sure what went down. I've seen like a part of it, but to me that was annoying, because let me just put this out here. It's not going to be a mass of nobody walking into Shiloh trying to take over my service. That's just not going to happen. Like, because there will be order in our house. I'm just putting that out there. But what I'm saying, it's other ways to do things, because you have people that want to do a show of force or do all these things when it's easily something that could be talked about. And like I said, I don't know situations, so I don't know if they tried to talk to the pastor or anything like that. But you know what I'm saying? Like, if there is really an issue and you have accurate leadership, then you should be able to talk to that accurate leadership and get an accurate response for them. So someone could come and say to me, Chioki, we feel that, there's no transparency here in how the church funding is spent. Well, that's perfectly fine. To the discretion that we can share, then we'll share. And we do that at the church. Listen, guys, this is what we're doing. We're going to be using some of the funds from this to do X, Y, and Z and X, Y, and Z and move like that and handle that and get that taken care of. But I really believe the issue is that a lot of people are an echo chamber for things that they really don't understand or don't know. And it's sad. In some cases, there have been people who have taken advantage of their congregation. There have been people who have mismanaged church funds, but that becomes an issue of that leader being inaccurate, and God is ultimately going to deal with them with that and anything else that comes along with that. So whether it's legal or whatever, there are things that come along with that. But however, I want our people to be very careful, and by our people, I mean especially black people, but just people in general, to be careful about picking up ideas or picking up stereotypes that you do not know to be true. So when you make these claims, just be educated. So a lot of people will drive by a church and say, that church don't do nothing. And it's just so happy you drove by on a Tuesday, and Wednesday is when they give out the food. Or you don't know, like, how many mortgages they've paid or how many hospital bills they've paid or what it is that they've done to serve the community. And all those things will not always be broadcast. And that's the other thing. With us being in the social media age, everybody wants everything to be broadcast. And when Jesus healed the lepers, he told them, hey, don't tell nobody. When he did the water with the wine, hey, everybody be quiet. So Jesus, if Jesus was here now, a lot of things that he was doing, he would not be putting them on Instagram or TikTok or Facebook Live. You know, so sometimes people have to understand just because you don't see it does not mean that it's not happening.
Yeah, no,
so
it's
I
real,
know it sounds
man.
A little aggressive, but that's just real.
So good.
No.
So good.
That's real. It's a slippery slope, man. Being on the outside looking in, it's a very slippery slope. And that's why I kind of alley-ooped that one to you, man, because I needed that response right there, dude. Very nice, very nice. Well, guys, we're almost up on time. Again, man, great kickoff to our four-part series, this one being the spiritual pillar. I appreciate you guys joining me. Again, this show wasn't just about talking about the issues, but actually driving change, man. And I think you guys in your lives, in your personal lives, in your congregations are really driving change. So I just wanted to give you guys an opportunity to, you know, give us more information about your churches and how we can stay connected with you in case anybody wants to get more involved in the community.
Definitely. Yeah. You go ahead, Pastor Bill.
No, go ahead, man.
No, I want you to go first because I keep forgetting the Church Fool Facebook page, so I got to look it up.
Okay. Val, thank you, man. I pastor the Journey Church. We're in Livonia. You can find us on most social media platforms or online at forlivonia.com, forlivonia.com. And right now, man, we're completely online. You know, we haven't met in person since March, and that is one of the realities of 2020. There's some reasons for that, but you can find us online at any of those, on Facebook, on Instagram, and of course online on the internet.
And you can find the Shiloh Deliverance Church. Right now we're in the middle of rebranding, so you can find us on Facebook at Shiloh Deliverance Church International. On Facebook, we have service live every Sunday at 10 a.m., and then we do our Bible studies on Wednesdays at 7. And then if you just look at the page, you can see we do a lot of different discussions and talks, and my brother has a segment where they do comedy and jokes. So we do a lot of different things on there. So if you just go to that page, you can see when we'll be doing whatever it is that we're doing, and you all are more than welcome to join us. And then pretty soon we're going to have Pastor Bill on, and we're going to continue this conversation. So I think that's going to be really, really dope. So I look forward to seeing you guys again.
Very nice. Awesome. Very nice. Well, again, thank you guys for joining me tonight. To all of my listeners, thank you for tuning in. We're going to go ahead and wrap up the show, and don't forget to be the change you want to see. All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.